The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined tonight by the man behind the sound effects at agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
Also have at PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Hello, hello. I do not have a massive Captain America shield, though.
You have a floating luchador mask.
Yeah, you know, I didn't feel like putting one of the actual ones on, so I'm using a virtual one tonight.
Cool.
Which is why, again, this is a plug. People, watch the show on YouTube. That's so much right. Better than just listening
exactly.
To the audio podcast.
Exactly. You know, Agent 70's got his brand spanking new Marvel Legends Captain America shield. And Dirt's got his virtual luchador mask on this week.
Although it's funny because I actually have a real version of this specific mask, but not wearing it.
Yeah, we've seen it plenty of times. Yeah. Nice. So it's just myself and at RowdyCat on Twitter that are mask and shieldless tonight.
Happy birthday to you, everybody.
Oh, but no. Roddy is underwater.
Roddy's underwater, but I'll greet him tonight nonetheless.
I've got all my right. Captain America Tumblr.
There you go. There's incentive to watch the YouTube show.
All right, how's that sound?
Much
you're
better.
Back normal.
Although,
good. Happy Luke Cage Eve.
That's right.
I do have an action figure loaf of bread, so there's something that you don't see every day either.
Nice.
Well, I got this box of Marvel trivia.
No, no. Yeah, we'll be here all night with Doug pulling things off his desk and shit.
Just leaving stuff off left and right.
You know? It's like, wait a second. I got the new Marvel Legends Punisher from Walgreens. Oh, all look right. At this.
I've got a vintage Starman pen. Check that out.
I got a rock.
It was a big rock.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, comic book news and reviews. On the homepage, you'll find social media links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+. Subscribe on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. We're also on. And we are also a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to CSPN.us. Do it today.
Do it today.
Wait, we're on TuneIn Radio?
Through the Cold Slither Podcast like main feed that has all the shows.
Huh, I didn't know that. See? Yeah.
We're fancy.
Oh.
Hey, speaking of subscriptions, let me go ahead and point out before we get started that I want to give a shout out to a couple of people. My friend Catmars77, who who's been, you know, hyping the show up for us. We appreciate her. We also have a new subscriber, Gaming Ronin, who subscribed because he was listening to last week's show. And then Cat also listened to last week's show. And we got a new subscriber out of it. So,
which we appreciate. I saw the alerts for the Gaming Ronin. Mm-hmm. Like in the YouTube and the Google+, so definitely appreciate that.
And also, Kat submitted a video. She gave me a link to one of the stories we got tonight.
Nice.
As did CSPN Media.
Yep. And let's see. So we also have a Redbubble account, redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. There's actually a shorter link for that Classic sent me on Twitter last week after I talked about we needed one, but I don't have that handy right now. It's irrelevant at the moment. I'll make sure to add it for next week's show.
There you go.
Yeah, because we've all had right. People asking about it.
We got to give the people what they want. Yeah. And the first comic book review of the night is going to be a twofer. We're going to discuss Captain America Sam Wilson, number 13, and Captain America Steve Rogers, number 5.
Yeah.
I think let's start with Captain America Steve Rogers, number 5. Both their names start with S's, so it's kind of confusing me. But this one is a Civil War tie-in issue, and it actually it took you behind the scenes of some of the events in Civil War 2.
it kind of shows you that that Steve Rogers is slinking around in the background in a lot of scenes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if you remember the first issue of Civil War II, number one, all the heroes defeated the celestial being at the beginning, and then they were partying in Avengers Tower. So we get to see what, during the party, we see how Steve was there and a bunch of Hydra goons were outside about to like launch some missiles and some rocket launchers to blow up the building and whatnot. But Steve called the raid off because once he learned about the new Inhuman named Ulysses, who can predict the future. So he went back to get some advice from Dr. Selvig from the Marvel movies, who's now made his way into the comics. He's a Hydra supporter that Captain America saved a couple of issues ago. So they discussed, you know, this new player on the board. What if he predicts a predicts the future and see and reveals to everyone that Cap is secretly working for Hydra and whatnot, yada yada yada. So they sort of go through some scenarios of how they need to like lay low and not plan anything just yet. And then we move forward again and we see I can't remember if these events take place in which order they come in, but there's one where Cap's gonna go and basically assassinate Ulysses in New Adelan, but when he gets to his bedroom, Tony Stark, aka Iron Man, is already there from issue 2 or 3 of Civil War. Right. So he decides to stop and not do anything there. And then it was that scene with the doctor. He tried to change something else. Oh, the scene where the Ultimates and Captain Marvel arrest that woman who they find out didn't have any links to Hydra and whatnot. So that lets Selvig and Cap know that not all of Ulysses' visions are correct. And then they end up flipping this to where they use it to their advantage and sort of set up Bruce Banner to be assassinated by the Hulk.
Oh, by Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, I'm sorry.
It's not spoiling it now. We're already 4 issues into... Aren't we already 4 issues into Civil War?
5 issues.
5 issues.
And it's kind of cool because they realize that it seems that Ulysses, at least in the main series, because if you go and look at some of the tie-ins, this isn't totally accurate, but in the main series, he's only predicting, you know, big-level things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, let's give him a high-impact incident to fight over, which ends up being the death of Bruce Banner. So it's like Cap's the big puppet master behind Civil War, making all the heroes do his bidding. But yet, somehow... somehow Ulysses doesn't have any vision of him pulling the strings, right. But he gets a vision of him being dead from Miles Morales, Spider-Man's hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was about to say, which is weird because we've seen there's another, we'll get to this later in another book. There seems to be another player, somewhat behind the scenes in another book.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to mention the parallel story that's being told in this is the corruption of young Steve Rogers that, you know, is the cause of this whole, you know, Hydra storyline, you know, kind of explaining this away, kind of, you know, like a maybe possible retcon. And we see some, I don't know if this character preexisted. I did not have a chance to do any research on this, but a character that's from the Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, the cinematic universe on the television, appears in this. And that's, spoiler alert, mild spoiler alert, because it doesn't play that big a role in the story, but I'll ring the bell. It's Daniel Whitehall. You know, they dropped the name, dropped the character, and he's alongside Dr. Faustus, a longtime Marvel and Captain America villain. So
they didn't use the name Faustus, did they?
That is Dr. Faustus, though.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't know who any of those two guys were.
They name him Dr. Sebastian Fenhoff. That's probably Faustus's real name. I'm not sure, but the artist makes it look very much like Dr. Faustus. So I kind of presumed. I could be wrong.
You're probably right.
You know, when I saw it, I thought that was Faustus. So, you know, kind of interweaving. You know, if this becomes a permanent retcon, which we know it won't be. But, you know, Nick Spencer's definitely weaving in a lot more of the Hydra slash Nazi scientists and characters into the new Hydra Cap's origin.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Faustus was also responsible for bringing in the new Falcon coming in.
Right.
He was in Sam Wilson's book, you know.
Right.
Okay. That's a nice segue over to Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 13. And in this one, it's as at the cover displays, it's U.S. Agent versus Captain America Sam Wilson.
There
we go. We have U.S. Agent being the puppet of the talk show hosts and the people that are doing the Take Back the Shield campaign, trying to get Sam Wilson to give up the shield.
I won't give it back.
You paid good money for that.
That's right. I'm not giving this back. It's mine. No. Mine.
Cap Sam is fighting the AmeriCops, enforcements.
Right. First he's fighting the AmeriCops because Rage is there causing some issues. Then he's trying to calm down the whole situation, but as it tends to do, it escalates into one, with the AmeriCops. That gets posted all over the news, which also gets back to the people that were, trying to get a U.S. agent to get involved, which, of course, it doesn't take that much more to do, even though initially he was like, nah, this is not my fight, but, he got into it anyway.
Though we do find out at the end what persuades U.S. agent to get involved.
Yeah, outside of those people.
Yeah, spoiler alert, there's some...
A person we just recently mentioned sneaking around on the back end.
Exactly. There's some machinations going on around here.
It really... Sam gets some new power somehow that I don't quite understand.
It's very, very Dark Knight Returns. No, not Dark Knight Returns. What is it? Movie was it? You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about?
The
cell phone thing?
Yeah. I think you might be right. So basically, there's two things that's real silly about this. One, he gets this implant that is pretty much turns his psychic power with birds into some sort of big psychic router to where when he's in an area, he can, the birds can transmit data to him, and then all this data goes into whatever, whatever actual computer stream data that they can use to surveil. Which kind of seems like some of the stuff that Carol's doing on the back end outside of the Ulysses visions, because at least, she's taking the visions and then kind of running the numbers on them, supposedly, and got people checking stuff out on the back end, in one day. But we'll get to that in her book in a minute. But he gets this from Tony, which I'm like, okay, the last person, ended up getting tech from Tony in a Civil War ends up things end up going bad for that person. So I can't imagine what this is going to end up doing when it's all said and done, because this can't go well.
No, I understand where you're coming from, but I just thought the parallel to one of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So is it the birds are going around and being his eyes for him? Is that what?
I mean, they already were. It's just taking all of that in and then just transmitting
it. Centralizing it. Exactly. Yeah. Centralizing it and recording it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. It does, but it doesn't.
All right. So that's
all of that, and pretty much all of that came about because at the end of the fight was U.S. agent on the other side of the token, Rage, dresses down Sam, talking about he's a sellout and this and that and the other, and Sam decides, well, this is what he's going to do. I don't know. Part of that doesn't really make any kind of sense, but it is what it is. By the way, how's Rage alive? Did that happen?
Is he dead? Was he dead before?
I thought he did.
If he was, it doesn't matter because everything got reset after Secret Wars.
Exactly. Well, I guess that's true. But I mean, I don't know because I figured, I don't know if he was on New Warriors when things went to shit the first Secret Wars, and I don't know if he was the one that got blown up in that whole thing.
I'm still not 100% clear on how Steve Rogers is back to life. Like, I remember him being killed, and then there was some sort of time stream.
You mean when he was killed after the first Civil War?
That's a good point. Yeah.
There was some timey-wimey stuff going on, and then suddenly he was back, and I never quite understood that whole process either.
Yeah, neither did I. And I remember vaguely reading it.
I understood Hickman Mumbo Jumbo better than that.
No!
We missed Hickman Mumbo Jumbo on the comic book chronicles.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We do. That was a very convoluted way of bringing Cap back. It was kind of ham-fisted, we'll put it that way.
It pretty much ends up being comics?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's kind of like that pro wrestling answer. How are those guys friends? They were just trying to kill each other last month. It's wrestling. Exactly. I thought Captain America was dead. How is he back? It's comics.
That's right. And marketing. And movies. So, all right. How about we move over to the Spider-Man area of the Marvel Universe? I know Dirt and I are very sad this
week. Don't say it, man. Don't say it. It's not real if we don't say it.
It's bad. It's really, really bad. We have reached not the penultimate, but the ultimate, the final issue of Web Warriors.
It's all come down to this.
Yeah, we are very, very sad to see this this comic book series go. I don't know why it hasn't received more mainstream, widespread support.
Venom and Carnage still have books, and they canceled this one.
Yeah, that's very disappointing.
What's up with them with Marvel canceling books at like number 11s lately?
I think they try to go to 12 so they can get like two volumes in at least. Because I notice a lot of times, anytime a number comes up, it's 12.
Yeah,
it seems to be either like 6 or 12.
This is 11. All New Inhumans was 11 as well a couple weeks ago.
Probably because they realized that when they put it into a book, they can just package in some old 70s.
Or, yeah.
Something that has an appearance that they can throw in there. So, yep.
Right, as long as they get it to the 5-issue mark, they can still pad it with extras like you were just mentioning.
But yeah, they can do 11 issues, and instead of a 12th issue to make it a nice thick book or volume 2, they'll just throw in like the first appearance of Ben Reilly and be like, look, there's more than one Spider-Man, and that's Web Warriors. Thanks for watching.
Right, or at least the, whatchamacallit, first appearance of Spider-Gwen. You know, she plays a role in this too, and that would be, you know, a selling point for people trying to pick up that second volume.
Yeah. So how was this final issue?
Fun, but it wraps things up very neatly, you know, but you know it's the end, and that's what's so disappointing.
Yeah, well, and it was also, like, it was kind of quick.
Yeah.
Like, there was any time before, this is what makes this book so fun, is that one of the Spider-Men comes from this world where the whole world is run by punk rock.
Yes.
It's like punk rock versus corporate, control, whatever. And so they have to defeat...
Like, what if Spidey was a Ramon?
So they had to defeat a giant robotic Spider-Man that was taken over by the souls of an army of Electros.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, punk rock Spider-Man and Spider-Gwen the drummer played the ultimate punk rock song that was able to lower the defenses of the giant robotic Electro so that Uncle Ben, who had spider powers from another universe, could mind his consciousness in with the Electros in order to soften their hearts and get them to stop the battle.
Right. And to stop the Harry Osborn, who had spider powers, from ruining the universal web.
And that sounds like it should be the absolute worst comic of all time, but the way it's done, it's the absolute best comic of all time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend this to all of our listeners, all of our viewers, you know, to Tim and Roddy, who haven't been keeping up with the series since it launched in the wake of Secret Wars. But, Mike Costa, the writer, David Baldi on the penciler, they've been consistent on this book. I think they've done every issue, and the consistency is there. The strength of the storytelling is there.
I think the artwork on the Spider-Man Noir might have been a different one, just because it was 20s black and white. I think I have this idea that one of them was done by someone.
One issue
else,
maybe it was like a fill-in.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you get great stuff like this evil Harry Osborn falling at the feet of Spider-Ham, and Spider-Ham yelling out lines like, "I want you to know, just before the concussion, you're about to get beat up by a pig," and he's Spider-Ham's cracking his knuckles, getting ready to attack. I mean, that is gold. I mean, if you cannot see the beauty in Spider-Ham beating up this evil Norman Osborn, then, I mean, there's just no hope for this world if that's not something that you value and you treasure.
Seriously.
That's so hopefully
what you were saying about the plot was reminding me of a fairly recent Black Canary story, actually, where a similar thing happened with trying to defeat an enemy. But that's interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it doesn't make sense except for the fact that stuff like that works in an alternate universe, so maybe it'll work in this universe, and it does, you know, but it's just one of those things where it's not like they don't really explain it. It's just one of those, like, well, in my universe, it's science. Okay, we'll try it, you know? It shouldn't work, but it does.
It's a lot of fun, you know, like I said earlier, definitely recommend you get out and read it. I agree with Dirt, it did go very quickly, but I think it's, you know, it's there to facilitate putting all the toys back into the toy box and to, you know, kind of leave the team in a good place so that anyone who decides to pick up the story of the Web Warriors can move forward. And also bear in mind that I believe the current season of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon on Disney XD has the subtitle Web Warriors, but I could be mistaken.
And I did pick up this variant cover, which I was quite happy to get a hold of.
Wow, and that's nice.
There is a plug in the back that says to keep your eyes open during Clone Conspiracy coming soon to the Spider-Man books, because Web Warriors may be making an appearance in there.
Nice.
So
I was about they didn't disband the team then, right?
No, it's one of those things where it ends because the battle keeps on going, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So they could very well pop up here and there. And
right, they'll appear in like an Amazing Spider-Man annual somewhere and pop up in Spider-Man Deadpool in a year, you know, just one of those things.
I didn't even realize that was the variant cover. I picked it up too. I did not even realize that was the variant cover, like, you know, with the physical copy, because I just had it, and I didn't really look at what the regular cover
was. So that's what I grabbed, was that variant, and then my son grabbed this variant. So,
wow.
He has that variant.
That is nice.
So I was going to say, with this book ending, then Spider-Verse is dead, but that's not, I guess that's not true.
No, not at all. The stories are there to be told. Like I said, they just wanted to kind of reset and have all the characters put back into place so that they would be accessible to any writer who needed them. They're out there.
Is 29 still going? Not to say that's part of it. 29 is okay.
Yes. Cool. All right. How about just we just stick in the Spidey corner. Did anyone read Spider-Gwen number 12?
Yes.
Anybody else?
No.
Very quickly, this was the culmination of the most recent story arc that features a showdown between Spider-Gwen and her universe's Frank Castle, who is actually a police officer, and basically he's hunting down Spider-Gwen as you know, one of the standing storylines is that law enforcement is hunting down Spider-Gwen because she is a masked vigilante who is accused of committing a particular crime. You know, I don't want to spoil it. I know it's 12 issues in, but I don't necessarily want to spoil that particular aspect just in case there are people out there who want to get caught up on Spider-Gwen. But this particular storyline ends with a kind of a heartbreaking twist in terms of what happens to this universe's captain, George Stacy, and what ends up happening to Spider-Gwen at the end when after Captain Stacy decides to do what he does, you know, kind of a heartbreaking twist, she decides to go down a much different path. And, you know, like I said, without trying to spoil the entire story, if this is, you know, kind of enticing, I recommend that you read it because it's a pretty interesting twist to this character, and I'm interested to see where we go from here.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty safe to say that the castle of this universe has stopped being a
police officer. Yeah,
probably a few issues ago, but this pretty much cements that the way the battle turns out. Let's just say,
right?
And yeah, then the whole thing with Captain Stacy's decision and what Gwen ends up doing after that is it's going to be a whole other thing going further. That's going to go well,
right? So, like I said, you know, in short, it's leading into a new, interesting direction for the character and the story. It's actually a pretty interesting idea. So, give it a read.
And we also, at the end of this, outside of that, get a, I guess you could say, a Marvel handbook entry on that universe's Reed Richards, which is funny to read.
Yes, there's a lot of fun in that. There's a lot of references to Cosmic Flame.
Yes.
So, give it a shot. This is a lot of fun. It looks like Doug is leading us towards a different book to review next.
That was an accident on my part, but okay. You know, if you read it, go for it.
I was about to say we were going to get back to Civil War anyway, so
yeah,
might as well.
Unless there's more spider books you had, right?
Because the last spider book I was going to mention is a Civil War 2 tie-in, so I was
about to go there for that, and then we'll get back into it.
Oh, you want to just do, you know, you want to cover the last spider book? Okay.
Yeah.
So the last spider book that I was going to discuss is Spider-Woman number 12. And Spider-Woman is consistently one of my 11. Sorry. I was looking at Spider-Gwen number 12. Spider-Woman number 11. This series has consistently been one of the stronger books that Marvel has been putting out lately. You know, it has it's a great character study. We don't necessarily see I'm not going to spoil it completely, but a supporting character that was kind of like the focus of the first arc of the book doesn't appear at all in this issue. You know, and there's no baby bump. What we have instead is Jessica Drew, aka Spider-Woman, dealing with the after effects of the major events of Civil War II. We find out that she, you know, she didn't have, you know, she was on very good terms with, surprisingly, both Bruce Banner and the Hulk, his alter ego.
I believe this was like around Avengers Assemble when they were teamed. Yeah,
right. So, you know, it's very interesting to see the after effects and how Jessica Drew deals with all of the Civil War II fallout. She undergoes, you know, her own kind of personal investigation into one of Banner's labs, and the Porcupine, who is a major supporting character in this book, decides to tag along and provide some much needed comic relief, because Jessica Drew is definitely dealing with some heavy feelings and emotion in the wake of the death of Bruce Banner. So, you know, it just reads, you know, there's a lot of coping and soul searching in this. It's just really, you know, a very good read.
And wrecking of a lab, which was highly unnecessary.
Yeah, pretty much. But then I was just gonna say, but ultimately the issue culminates with a knockdown, drag out fight and serious discussion between Spider-Woman and Carol Danvers, aka Captain Marvel.
Realistically, it was a one sided fight because Carol wasn't you know making any blows, but because she knew, and,
right?
You know, and she was like, well, okay, look, you. Let it all out. We can patch this up, which they don't do.
No, they don't. Yes, exactly. Surprisingly enough, they don't necessarily hash things out.
Yeah,
you know, that's putting it mildly. You know,
which is kind of a theme this week with Carol and running through at least two or three of the Civil War tie-in books.
Yes, that is a good point. And for anyone who has been following Civil War II up to this point. You know, if you had any sort of affection or a connection with Carol Danvers up to this miniseries, you may be having some problems identifying with the character. And more, the character is finding herself on the outs with some of her superhero friends and family. You know, and yeah. it's a theme that's kind of carrying through some of these tie-in books. And Dirt has been kind enough to put up the next book that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of felt reason. I felt like you were leading in that direction.
Yeah, pretty much. Roddy, you want to take this one?
Sure. So, Ms. Marvel number 11. Another tie-in. We see Kamala trying to fix what's been done already. You know, her friend Bruno's in the hospital because of some dealings we did. You know, wasn't sure at the point of the beginning of the book whether he was going to make it out of this or not. But outside of that, and she's been kind of staying with him the whole time, but on the other side of that, she goes off to tries to fix things and try to break up this whole initiative thing that's going on with Carol in the Jersey part of it. So if this wasn't known, Kamala was put in charge of this small task force of teams with some, I don't know if they have powers or some powered armor or whatever, to right. basically go out and... you know, be Carol's arm in New Jersey to try to find and, you know, pretty much profile people and get them off the streets before they do anything, right. whatever they potentially were going to do. So this is Kamala trying to fix that after a fight with, quote-unquote, basic Becky, last issue. Mm. Kamala sets up a trap involving a fake Vision.
And or a fake threat.
Well, a fake threat of right. a Vision, yeah, correct. Exactly. Which apparently is getting easier to do during the course of Civil War II.
Right. Basically trying to manipulate Ulysses.
Well, I thought you meant the Avenger Vision.
Oh, no. Yeah, no.
No, basically, you know, one of the things that Kamala puts into motion is a way to either deceive or manipulate what Ulysses sees. And mm-hmm. basically what she does is, you know, it's a setup. But Ulysses turns out to not be totally incorrect. And, mm-hmm. You know, basically this kind of strike force that Kamala Khan is supposed to be leading responds. And,
well, at least one of them does. Becky does, because the rest of them, I think, was kind of off on their own.
Right. But they respond, and then ultimately Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, also responds.
Because Kamala calls her in, but she also calls in someone else who happens to show up in here, and that is one Tony Stark. Right. And the heartbreaking part about this issue is like, Kamala sets up this trap and, you know, has a little mini fight with Becky, and then Captain Marvel shows up, and then they talk, and Kamala says something that she probably wishes she didn't, and right. That starts the whole ball rolling of their rift between them becoming art and Kamala's, you know, being that Captain Marvel has been her idol. And the weird part about that whole conversation was Carol was like, you have my name, you know, you have my name, and, you know, I trusted you and this and the other, which is true, but at the same time, like, okay, Carol, you took your name from somebody else, so I don't know if you kind of have that. I mean, yeah, Miss Marvel was your name, but you kind of took that off another, but semantics, whatever. So that happens, and just in, as if on cue, Iron Man comes down, and then they have another little, you know, tete-a-tete, and like I said, all trust has been broken. Carol goes off in a huff after disbanding, well, after saying she's going to take over the thing and arresting Becky, who went, you know, went off on her own to do this thing against what should be doing.
Right. And so, yeah, then, this Becky character goes rogue and basically gets in trouble for it. And
probably end up being another supervillain at some point. We don't know.
Right. Right. So what we find is that if you know, for the listeners and viewers who are not familiar with Kamala Khan's, with Ms. Marvel's current status in the Marvel U, she's a member of a couple of different factions or and teams. And, you know, at least in this book, she had been on the side of Captain Marvel for a good number of issues, but has found herself off that side, and if not in the middle, on the other side of the predictive justice fence. And we're leading into a book that's launching next week with the events that are in this issue.
Mm-hmm. And we also, as I was going to say, well, where were you going to go? Because I was going to get to the.
No, I didn't want to. I didn't want to necessarily. You know, it's basically a preview of next week's new releases.
That's true.
You know, there. You know, just in case anyone didn't know already, Marvel is relaunching the Champions title, but is going to make it kind of a Teen Titans type book. So that's going to be interesting to see. That's coming out next week. And I think what Roddy was about to get to is where this story very sadly ends.
Mm-hmm. Because after end of the whole situation with Cap and Iron Man and whatever, Kamala goes back to the hospital to find her best friend Bruno is awake, but he's struggling to try to walk because, you know, he found out that he was going to have to learn how to walk again and use his dominant hand again, and he lost all his scholarships, but apparently one still exists in Wakanda, and he's choosing to do that. And of all places. And also the fact that he doesn't want to have anything to do with Kamala.
Yeah.
Right now. So, and that's heartbreaking because they've been the best of friends for the longest time. We also see
since Bruno was a little stinky kid in school.
Exactly. But we also see a little bit of past, or I guess a recent, fairly recent past, dealing with Kamala, Bruno, and her bracelet that she has on, which is a family heirloom, because we find out that Bruno ended up doing some work on that, and, you know, also talking to Kamala's mom
right
about what's been going on, because Kamala's mom, who we now know knows that she's Miss Marvel, did not know then at the time that this member was going on, what was going on. So Bruno was trying to cover up him, but not doing it well.
Yeah, no, it's a very, you know, there's a lot of mini storylines that are tied up in this issue. And again, this issue, as I said earlier, leads into the new direction for the character. You know, not only teasing a level of independence, or at least a different team affiliation in Champions, the next issue teaser very much implies Kamala Khan striking out on her own.
Or at the very least, because there are some implications of her going back to Pakistan.
That's a good point.
So, because at the end, at the very end of this, we see her walking off into the sunset like Bruce Banner from the 1970s Incredible Hulk.
Okay,
and that's where we leave off.
So, does Bruno get hurt in this issue or last?
No, he got hurt
2 issues ago.
Two issues ago, yeah.
Okay. Because I haven't read.
He tried to. Yeah. So basically what happened was, and sorry, spoiler for anybody who's trying to read this, but he went and to do something because one of their friends was one of the ones profiled to do something that he was or wasn't do, got put in jail, so Bruno was going to try to break him out, and which doesn't work. Okay. Ends up putting him in the hospital.
Yeah, bad stuff happened to him trying to help out, you know, some of these guys. Some of these folks that got caught up in the predictive justice net, so...
So at this point, Kamala has pretty much lost all of her friends, do one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of, you know, it's kind of moving day in the Ms. Marvel corner of the universe. So there's a lot of change afoot. And, you know, as a result of her involvement in Civil War II.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other tie-in books for Civil War II this week that are good?
I guess that would go back to Ultimates. Or, well, wait, Captain Marvel, because I guess that would be the closest lead-in to that.
Okay. You read that?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Captain Marvel number 9.
Go for it.
So, Carol's got a lot of pressures on her, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, her friends leaving left and right because of decisions, you know, she's been involved with. You've got this council that is backing her operation on her back to do more, widening the net, as we say, and they're kind of coming down on hard. And this is actually, I guess you could say this kind of takes place after or around Ms. Marvel number 11, I guess you could say, because at the beginning of the book. Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell because, you know, well, we know it definitely does happen after Civil War 5 because, you know, and I'm assuming Spider-Man's book may touch on this also, because like at the beginning of the book, she's kind of by herself and saying, hey, she lost these two people. I mean, you know, lost the trust of these two people that were under her charge with this, that, you know, was respecting her. Then she kind of goes off into something else until she gets called by Alpha Flight to go take down this, I guess, Canadian villain or something, that somebody from Alpha Flight's.
Yeah, one of the Beasts of the North or something. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And then after that gets taken care of, which you notice the focus kind of gets shifted towards one of the members of Alpha Flight, Aurora, whom, funnily enough, has a vision about her when Ulysses comes to the base, to Alpha Flight base, which is coincidental. He has a vision dealing with her fighting Carol, which, due to circumstances of a self-fulfilling prophecy, ends up actually happening.
Of course.
Because of the widening of the net that that this council's trying to do, and Carol's involvement with it, and her back being firmly up against the wall. This fight happens because Aurora's trying to quit the team because of circumstances, you know, with the widening of the net and her involvement with the vision, more specifically, and that leads to them fighting. And then we see a cut to a person watching this fight who happens to be on the self-same council that is backing her operation. And this person is also a Canadian. So who apparently has wanted this fight to happen for whatever reasons we don't yet know about, but we get to see that, hey, this person kind of set this up to be this way.
Okay.
For whatever odd reason. So there's some things going on within and without.
Right. All right. Are you done with that? Because I've got another Civil War II tie-in. That is the totally, totally awesome Hulk number 10. So this issue guest stars the Black Panther and Hulkbuster Black Panther. you know, there's a very prominent Hulkbuster type suit that T'Challa uses in this. It's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Basically, the Black Panther is trying to track down Amadeus Cho because he firmly believes that no one should have this kind of power in them, Bruce Banner or anyone else. And he's trying to prevent Amadeus from doing harm to himself or others. And T'Challa consults with Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, and she assigns a particular S.H.I.E.L.D. agent to accompany T'Challa. His name is Jake O-O-H, another young Korean man. So there's a couple of young Korean-American characters in this book now, Amadeus Cho and Jake O. And there's a lot of cool exchanges. There's a few cool exchanges between Jake O and T'Challa that kind of sets the tone for their partnership, for their working relationship in this issue going forward. Basically, they work through their issues and figure that Amadeus Cho is on the run and on the hunt for one Clint Barton. This is obviously happening in the aftermath of the assassination of Bruce Banner. We also get, you know, there's a couple of glimpses of the rage monster that's quietly lurking in the depths of Amadeus Cho's subconscious. This has been an ongoing storyline, sub storyline in this book throughout the first 10 issues. And there's a couple of very cool interactions between T'Challa and Amadeus as we get to the eventual combat between the characters and the Hulkbuster Panther armor that T'Challa is using. There's a lot of cool things here. One of the main aspects of this run of Totally Awesome Hulk is that Amadeus chose Hulk as a self-proclaimed monster buster, monster hunter, and that is a big aspect of the cliffhanger at the end of this issue, which seemed kind of out of left field for me. And I think that was like the weakest part of this issue, that Amadeus's sister, who is a sometimes Oracle type character for him, helping him with logistics while he's off doing Hulk stuff. The cliffhanger, the monster related cliffhanger at the end of this issue, I thought was probably the weakest part of the issue. I thought that the confrontation and the conversations between two of the smartest characters in the Marvel universe, kind of having a back and forth, in the pages of this book was, I thought, the strongest part of the book. So I thought that the ending was kind of anticlimactic. I'm looking forward to the next issue just to see how T'Challa and Amadeus Cho kind of work out, their issues from, that are kind of aired out in this issue.
Some small notes, speaking of, because I'm not sure if we mentioned this with Spider-Woman or not. So the reason why Carol and Jess ended up fighting was because Jess was breaking into Alpha Flight to get away to go
visit Compartment Clan. Right.
Yes. And as the Total Officer Hulk also alludes to, well, not even alludes to what happens, but it also comes out in this book that Hawkeye being as popular as he is, people have been kind of trying to come after him. And a matter of fact, they were saying, it was like, yeah, three people tried to break into his cell block, to get to him fairly recently.
Right. They even mentioned the Deadpool break-in from Uncanny Avengers.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's what ends up being leading to that fight between them. And also, I forgot to mention Captain Marvel. There's a mole in apparently Alpha Flight.
Mole.
And it may or may not tie back to, or it looks to be appearing to tie back to Tony Stark, because apparently he may or may not have had some stuff put in place to eavesdrop on Carol's operation. But there is that. So I guess are we going to Ultimates now or New Avengers?
Either one.
So Ultimates, because I guess New Avengers is the least tie-in of the two. So Ultimates number 11. You want to take that one?
Sure. I'll just do this very quickly because there were a lot of tie-in issues this week for mm-hmm. Civil War number 2. Basically, Thanos, who is who's captured early on in the in this particular run of Ultimates, makes his move with what is this guy's name? The Antimatter Man?
Connor Sims, yeah.
Right, exactly. The Antiman, Blue Marvel's kind of arch enemy. Basically Thanos is making his move to break out of the Triskelion, out of his imprisonment. There's a couple of really cool splash pages right up front by Kenneth Rocafort, kind of displaying what the current status of the major cosmic level characters is.
Yeah, I was about to say, hey, remember all that stuff from the beginning of this Ultimates run? They just kind of bring that back for whatever reason.
They kind of, and it's very interesting to see some of these, like what happened to the Shaper of Worlds, really? In the Living Tribunal and Infinity, they're all depicted here. It's a very interesting splash page, couple of pages. Basically, Thanos makes his move to try to break out, and most of this issue is dealing with the Ultimates' efforts to try to put him back in his cage. And they're successful after a lot of various efforts and techniques that they try to employ and tactics that they try to employ. But at the end of this issue, spoiler alert, and surprisingly enough, they are able to temporarily neutralize Thanos. I mean, listen, this is not like a weak team. This is not like Cap's Cookie Quartet. There are some very, very powerful characters on this Ultimates team.
Right, it's a mixture of intelligence and various strengths.
Exactly. So it's it's kind of like, oh, how did Thanos get punked so easy? But we all know that it's only a temporary setback, and also deals directly with some of the issues that the members of the team are having with Captain Marvel's approach to this predictive justice issue.
So there was a couple of, well, there was an issue I had with this, but there was also an interesting note for an art change, because as you mentioned in the beginning, we have Kenneth Walker's art, which is gorgeous, and then the art changes to some other style for the fight.
Right.
For whatever other reason, which, you know,
it's a help with scheduling, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true, yeah.
Because I presume it's a help with scheduling.
Shout out to Matt Wang, who actually just mentioned this on Twitter like 5 seconds ago.
Haha, great minds. But yeah, that was okay. That was the one thing. So I was like, huh, that was interesting. But the thing that really got me about this this issue was, as soon as they took down Thanos, they was like, well, yeah, but that's taken care of. Oh, but now we need to talk about the Civil War thing. I'm like, what? That put him in a cell or something before you start talking about before you start hashing out your issues again. Why you want to go into the right there? He's laying like 2 seconds in front of you, like right there in front of you, and you're having and starting fighting again against each other about, you know, what's going on with Civil War. So I thought, so I was like, okay, that felt kind of tacked in, even though, you know, we get it, it's in there. But I was like, okay, that part could have waited or didn't need to happen.
Yeah, I definitely understand that point. I think that's a valid point. Just very quickly moving on to New Avengers. Tim, you didn't read this?
I did not get to it yet.
Okay, I won't spoil too much because there are a lot of fun things that do happen in this Al Ewing book.
As normal.
Exactly. Like I said, I don't want to spoil everything. There's a lot of great action sequences in this. All the characters, Al Ewing is very good at having all the characters have a little bit of shine every issue. And that definitely occurs here. It appears that President Obama makes a slight cameo appearance in this. And there's a great sequence. I know that Squirrel Girl is getting a lot more exposure in the current Marvel Universe. She does have a pretty interesting sequence in this issue, as does, what's the name of the silly squirrel?
Oh, Tippy Toe.
Oh, Jesus. So yeah, the Tippy Toe squirrel has a nice little sequence in this issue too.
Right. And it has to do with vermin of all people. So,
yes, exactly. You know, well, you know, in some people, an old friend isn't exactly a friend of squirrels, and kind of looks at them as rats that have better PR because they have bushy tails, you know? Shout out to Doc C. I'll let her know that I shout her out on the podcast at some point. But ultimately, what ends this issue is a pretty, pretty shocking cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm
which
I'm,
also kind of seems to come out of the blue, but in the course of New Avengers, it's been a running theme.
Yes.
Within the last couple, so.
Right. It has been a running theme, but it's definitely, you know, kind of a shocking cliffhanger ending. I hope I didn't spoil too much, Tim, because this was a very fun read.
Yeah. One might say the ending could possibly be a self-fulfilling prophecy again.
Right.
Another thing that's been going through this week's books.
Right. So.
Okay.
All right. So that's that. I think we covered all of the Civil War II books.
I believe that's the case. Outside of Kingpin, which I don't know if either one of us read.
Nope.
Yeah.
Actually, I did.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Amazingly enough. Actually, it's funny because this book has at this point pretty much backed out of the whole Civil War storyline. The main hook was that Wilton Fisk had a guy working for him who somehow had this power that made him invisible to Ulysses. And so Fisk was using him basically to get away with crime. And the guy disappeared. And so he doesn't know, has the guy been murdered? Has he been kidnapped? Did he switch allegiances? Whatever. He doesn't know, but Punisher comes after him. And this whole issue, it's narrated with a conversation that Fisk and Castle are having at the end of the issue, but it's playing all the way throughout while you see Fisk, you know, trying to track this guy down, Punisher making his move, the big battle that ensues, whatever, and then we get to the end. It was a very interesting laid out story. The story itself is pretty simple, but the mechanics of how it was told, the narration you realize about 3/4 of the way through is from an upcoming conversation. You don't get that, you know, early on. So it was a neat technique that was used to move the story through. Mm-hmm. But it is a pretty simple, you know, Punisher versus Kingpin story. But with removing the character who can hide from Ulysses, you kind of lose everything that ties into Civil War. So for being a Civil War tie-in, as far as that goes, this issue, I don't know if it's going to come back to it or if they've just decided to move on. But it's pretty absent in this one. But the story itself was neat to read the way that they unfolded it. So I was still happy with the issue anyway.
I feel like this book was probably just a reason to get Kingpin back in the way and back into play.
Yeah, and that's a lot of what it is him trying to rebuild after, you know, whatever setbacks he's had recently, whatever. So there is that aspect of it where he's putting his network back together. And because of the fact that he could get away with murder and stuff because of this guy, he was able to for so long. But now that that's done, like I said, I don't know if it's going to come back to it. I would hope so. I would hope that it would come back in the next issue and circle back around, but it very well may not. Who knows? That guy might show up in something else somewhere else. But still, this issue itself is worth reading. And even if you haven't read the entire miniseries, but you want a nice Punisher storyline, this was a pretty good issue for that, too.
Is there any allusion to Kingpin crash? I mean, Punisher crashing Kingpin's party around the time of the incursions?
Pre-Secret War?
Yeah.
Pre-Secret War?
Yeah, right. At the end of the incursions, right? You know, like when, at the end of All Things or whatever it was.
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I'd have to go back and take another look. Yeah. Okay. But I don't think so, no.
End of days.
Yeah.
All right.
You guys got DC stuff? Come on.
Yeah, let's switch over to DC.
Yeah.
Okay. Had a couple good books come out from there. See, Batman Beyond, Rebirth number one, was one of the two new Rebirth titles. It basically set up Terry McGinnis back.
Yeah, kind of reset.
Under the mask.
Right, kind of
reset. Yeah, basically reset. Batman Beyond.
Yeah, how did it do this reset? Because the last we saw, wasn't Terry dead and Tim Drake the 5 years later had gone to the future to take his place?
I didn't read it, but the final issue of the pre-Rebirth Batman Beyond brought him back. I think the way they described it in this Rebirth issue, I think Spellbound or Spellbind, the enemy of Batman Beyond's, had him as a prisoner and like brainwashed him. And Tim Drake helped him break the mind control. So now he's back.
Comics.
The big takeaway is they're introducing the Joker in the future. His body.
Spoiler alert! Dang it.
The Joker gang is running around, and one of the members has the Joker's like on life support body, and he's gonna revive him.
But which of the three Jokers is it?
I totally forgot about that.
See, and the thing is, I liked that revelation, and I loved when they did that, but they've done almost nothing with it since then. It's like, hey, here's this giant bombshell, let's rewrite reality, and just move on, forget it ever happened.
Yeah, like, I'm sure we'll find out where and when that comes into play, but like which Batman book is that going to take place in? Is that like a Tom King Batman or Snyder All-Star Batman, or is that like a larger like Justice League story to be told?
Yeah, who knows?
Or maybe Jeff Johns was going to originally have something to do with it, and then since he got all these new job positions and offers with the DC EU, now someone else has to pick up the slack.
Well, that's like, okay, I'll use this to transition into the next one, Titans. Titans started out with Kid Flash returning from having, you know, been dead, dissolved, disappeared into the ether a universe ago. Right. And now he's been reconstituted. He comes back. Everybody had forgotten about him. So now he's trying to make his way back into this reality and figure out what happened. And at the end of issue two, Kadabra, who is this guy from the future who uses technology to pretend he's this great magician pulling off whatever evil tricks, he's like, well, I'm the one that made it happen. And you're like, no, you didn't. This guy's stupid. What is this? Go away. But then in this issue, he says it again, and they're all like, oh, yeah, that must be how it happened, because he did this, 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 and this, and that's why it happened. And you're like, no.
Wasn't this the issue he didn't say it last issue that he had anything to do with Wally returning, did he?
Well, they said he would be the one person to have done it, and I think he said something like, I got rid of you because you were my greatest adversary, or something like that. And then in this issue, he says it again. Oh, okay. And then starts explaining, you know, every time I tried to do something, you were always the one who stopped me. So I had to get rid of you so that I could finally take my place. And you're like, what? No, not this guy. Like, that's this funny. Has nothing to do with all the rebirth things that we've seen.
But so, he actually could have something to do with it, though.
But he shouldn't. I mean,
there's a difference, like, right?
I was about to say, it's safe to say that Kadabra probably has a little bit of delusions of grandeur.
Or he's just a puppet. of
that,
the larger...
That would be like Civil War 7 being like, oh, the final battle's coming. We have to make sure that we take out Stilt Man before he destroys the universe.
Goodness.
You know? I mean, it's like, come on.
I enjoyed this more. I wasn't too excited with Titans as the new series started, even though it was one of the rebirth books I was looking forward to, but issues 2 and 3 have at least picked it up more for me. I like the a lot of stuff that I guess Dirk didn't like. I enjoyed not so much him being like, aha, I'm the one that brought you back from the, brought you from pre-New 52 to here, because I just automatically just ignored it because I figure it's some larger scheme to be played by that guy. But like we get some more teases to the larger rebirth story, because we find out who his great, great, great grandfather could be. It has to do with the watch of his great, great grandfather's.
Yeah.
His blood on it.
Yeah.
So there's that.
I guess my thing is when they do this quote unquote reveal, whatever, and they say that it's Kadabra, in my heart of hearts, I want to say, no, this is just a red herring, but there's a more rational part of me that says, dang it, this is the crap that they're actually going to do.
Have faith.
No, I don't.
Oh, no.
I don't.
Oh, no. Listen to Dirt not this have is, faith in DC.
This is 2016 comics. Come on.
They're bringing back the love, man.
So how did you like Teen Titans Rebirth?
Actually, I have not read it. It's okay. I actually wanted to hear what you thought about it before I spent the time, because I'm either going to go, that's interesting, now let me do something else, or I want to shove pencils in my ears until the world goes silent.
Anybody want to take a bet from which one he wants? Which one?
That's funny.
I'll just say, it was. I liked it. For one, it had some great art from John Boy Myers, and I forget the colorist's name, but the colors on it are awesome.
Charlampidis.
Oh, stop butchering the group name. Oh, my gosh. Hold on. Let me see what this name is.
It's on the screen if you can see the bottom.
Charlampidis. Charlampidis.
Like I was saying, Charla Lampidis.
Yeah, that's not that hard to say. Yeah. So it's basically Damien in the Shadows, quote unquote, recruiting the members of his Teen Titans he's forming.
Yeah. Weird way to recruiting, do it.
Although recruiting as in stunning them and kidnapping them.
The one thing I heard is that this is more in line with the old school Teen Titans, not the new 52 Teen Titans. Like the mechanic, the buildup of the team. I mean, obviously there's no Cyborg, but the rest
Raven,
of it.
Is Raven gathering the team? I gotcha.
Yeah.
No, I just told you he's gathering the team.
Oh.
Yeah, Damien did. Robin gathering
the team. Oh, fine.
Robin, not Raven.
Come fine, on. Fine, fine.
Different bird.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the art style. So for one, there's that. Every page looks great. I mean, the story, I mean, it's the typical like rebirth issue where, you set up what the main series is going to be. So once the number one issue comes out next month and the series gets along, I have a better sense of it. But I mean, I'm count me in so far.
Okay, question, Tim. Was it pretty plain to see what was going on early on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's Robin going around kidnapping everyone.
Yeah. And it's like they try to hide it, but at the same time, it's like, okay, you can kind of
see. Yeah, he starts off with a Beast Boy, kidnapping Beast Boy. So at that point, I didn't know that was Robin, but I think we got Raven. I was like, oh, okay. Because I think they made it clear at that point it was Robin that was doing it.
Yeah, they kind of kept adding more to it, but it was like, well, okay, we can kind of see who this is.
Yeah. Like, if you suppose that thing it's I can't remember. I know Titans is getting another member of the group, but I think Teen Titans is too, like a secret member that's been teased and hasn't been shown yet in solicits.
I don't know if they do like they've done probably other volumes. It'll come. They'll probably end up fighting first and then end up joining the team or something.
Maybe
or in a couple issues. Who knows?
See, Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps number 5 was pretty good. This is the Green Lantern book to read, people.
Yeah, and actually I'm kicking myself because I hadn't gotten around to reading it yet. I totally meant to, and I just forgot, slipped, through my fingers this week.
I got to it an hour before the show started, so I was glad.
Pretty close.
I was glad I did. Yeah, I was kind of close. So, Guy Gardner is still a prisoner of the Sinestro Corps on War World. Hal Jordan has woken up from the surgery that Serenek has performed on him. She catches him up to speed on how the Green Lantern Corps was gone, The Sinestro Corps stepped up to be the new police force of the universe under her leadership because Sinestro was dying. He absorbed the Parallax entity energy somehow, and it turned him back young and strong again. So he took back control, and now their Sinestro Corps is a big, big bad police force of the universe. They're still they're sort of guardians of the universe, but they're doing it through fear, obviously, because they're the Sinestro Corps.
The AmeriCops?
Yeah, they're the AmeriCops of the DC Galactic Universe. John Stewart is leading the rest of the Green Lanterns that came back from the other universe or whatever. They go out to try to find what happened to Guy Gardner. They ran into some aliens who filled them in about how Sinestro's running things, and they asked for the Green Lantern's help. Of course, they say they will. So basically, it's the Green Lanterns led by Stewart heading off to War World, and Hal Jordan also heading off to War World to put an end to Sinestro's reign as the issue ends. Art by Ethan Van Sciver, as you can see on the cover, is very elaborate, detailed line work.
He always goes way, somehow, he's like the hardest working guy in comics.
Yeah. There's like two or three like splash pages that look just like this this cover right here. And the only other DC book I got to this week was Detective Comics number 941, and it's a Night of the Monster Men crossover. That's just a crossover. Nothing really happens.
Yeah, I thought the first couple were at least kind of interesting, but very quickly it became clear that this is one of those things where you have to read every chapter or it's just really? Not going to make sense. And
did they build a mecha to fight the kaiju yet?
No.
Oh, something actually does, something interesting, I guess, does happen in this issue. I was like, nothing really happens
until the end.
Yeah, stuff that happens in this issue is the same stuff that happened in the previous two issues, so you didn't really miss much. But yeah, something.
But the thing that happens at the end was one of those where I was actually kind of groaning out loud. I was just like,
yeah,
oh,
I did too.
Come on.
I was just like, ugh. I was like, I wish I had like gotten to some of the other like Flash or something else instead of.
Yeah, well, okay, so here's the thing. My son, he likes Batman. He saw Batman vs. Superman, likes Batman, and he likes Clayface. For some reason, Clayface is just a character that totally grabs his imagination. So when they announced that there was this detective, and it was Batman building this team, and Clayface was going to be, you know, attempting to be a hero, my son really wanted to read Detective. So no problem, he's been reading Detective. So this issue comes out, he doesn't read anything else. He doesn't read Nightwing, he doesn't read Batman, he's not reading, you know, any other of the books. He sits down and he flips through this and he goes, "What is going on?" And I said, "Honestly, I've been reading it the last couple issues and I'm not 100% sure. It's things are turning into monsters and they're attacking Gotham and they have to save everybody." He's like, "Yeah, I get that, but who and why and how?" And I, "Yeah, buddy, you just had to read the other ones. Like, this is not a crossover written where you can read the one chapter that's in your book and get enough of the information to follow what's going on and to feel like you've got a complete story. You have to read every chapter in this crossover in order for it to even attempt to make sense." And so he just put it in his box of comics and moved on. He was really not happy with this at all.
Yeah, it's not a tie-in. It's a part of the crossover.
Well, and they've done crossovers before where, you know, a character is trying to solve some sort of problem, and so they're meeting with these other characters along the way to try to, you know, pick up pieces of the puzzle or whatever, but it's always a complete chapter for the book that you're reading. So if, you know, you get the trade paperback that collects, you know, the first six issues of this relaunch of Detective, you're going to have this one issue in the middle that is not connected to the issue before, is not connected to the issue that comes after, and makes absolutely no sense in the collection. Like, this only works if you're reading the Night of the Monster Men collection, but when you're sitting down to read a run of Detective Comics, it's just going to stick out like a sore thumb and not make any sense. Yeah. So, yeah, this one, it started to dawn on me how poorly put together this crossover really feels on the whole.
Yikes. Yikes.
Yeah. Not a fan of it.
DC, or were you in rapid fire?
Well, here, let me run through a bunch of these DC then. In Flash, we found out last issue that Godspeed was actually a friend of Barry Allen who
didn't see that coming.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, you did have the possibility because there were so many superpowered people showing up. But yeah, they kind of telegraphed it a little while back. But so avenging the death of his brother, he went after the villains. He took them out. He absorbed their speed power. And then realizing that he could do that, he started going after some of the other people that had the speed power. And of course, when he took the power from them, it killed them. And so Flash figures out that if they surrender it willingly, the Speed Force can move back to another person without killing the original Speed Force holder. So a bunch of the recruits that want to get rid of their powers, they surrender them to Barry, and he's able to absorb them. So now he's closer to the power of Godspeed because they're both souped up. Although one particular character decides she wants to keep her powers. So she'll return at some point down the line. But Barry and Godspeed are going head-to-head, and Godspeed decides he's got one more thing he's going to do. And since he's still just a little bit faster than the Flash, he thinks that there's nothing the Flash can do to stop him. So it sets up a good cliffhanger for the next issue. I enjoy the story. The artwork is again, fantastic. The guy, he's D. Domenico, however you say that. But anyway, good story, good artwork, fun read altogether. Deathstroke. This Deathstroke series is really good. And this goes into Ravager, a little bit of her backstory, where she's at now, her relationships with Slade, how all of this stuff works out. She's still an assassin in a way, but she's a little different than her father. And the way she takes contracts and works them out is a little different. But it's fun to see how all of this works together. The universe that Priest is building in here is a lot of fun. The connections between all the characters, he's really world building in this book. So even though it's Deathstroke, it's much more than a book just about Slade. It kind of centers around him, but it's like a good TV show. Like, you know, take The Flash, for instance. Sure, it's about Flash, but it's really, you know, you've got three people working in the lab. You got a couple people in the police department. You know, you've got all this other stuff going on. As much as that show is about Flash, it's really about him and all of the people around him. And that's the way Deathstroke has been built. It's really building a good, strong supporting cast. And I think that really helps it to feel fleshed out and feels a little bigger than it should be. Action Comics. So in the past few issues of Action, we've seen that there's a Clark Kent running around, and that Clark Kent obviously is not the current Superman. It's a different person. And so Superman tries to figure out who this guy is and where he came from. And I don't want to spoil anything except to say that the answer is still somewhat in the air, even though we've got some answers in this one. Things are not some playing answers out the way you think they will.
There you go.
Before I thought it was a character of the Matrix who was a shapeshifter, whatever, but this character appears to be someone different. Or maybe even a Clark Kent from another universe, perhaps. We're not 100% sure, but it's intriguing. And even though not really a whole lot happened in this book as far as action, it was still very good to read. It's building a good story, again, with that Clark Kent and the mystery of who he could be and where he comes from and whatever. So that's definitely still high on my reading list, the way it's playing out. Suicide Squad, oh...
Oh, yeah, I didn't read that.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's not the reaction I expected.
This is just... This does not make sense on any level.
It's better than the first issue. The first issue, I couldn't stand the first issue.
Well, yeah, because in the first issue, nothing happened.
Yeah.
This one's like a big battle. Yeah. So you at least get that out of it. But at the same time, it's like, for some reason, General Zod is like the Hulk. He's 8.5 feet tall, and he's 3.5 people wide.
He's a Kryptonian.
Well, so is Superman, but Superman doesn't look like Andre the Giant, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous. Like Killer Croc. Like, you see Killer Croc compared to all these other people, and he's much bigger. That's what General Zod is like. He's the size of Killer Croc in this artwork. He's huge, massive.
Closer to the movie version, what they ended up doing with him?
With Zod? No, he's more like when Doomsday first appears in the Batman versus Superman movie.
Right. Wow. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, just huge. So yeah. And there's still no explanation.
That's really bad.
There's still no explanation as to why Harley Quinn is there. She doesn't bring anything at all to the team. She turns against the team very easily. Yeah,
Robbie.
That's why you're going to sell the tie-in issues. I know, I understand that. But storyline-wise, it just makes absolutely no sense. And one of the characters on this cover appears to actually be dead. It looks like they may have confirmed it in this, which kind of sucks, because it's a character who's been around for quite a long time. But nonetheless, there you go. So I'm not digging this Suicide Squad.
Okay.
It needs an overhaul pretty quick.
But it just started.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? And then the last thing I've got here from DC is Blue Beetle, number one. Starting the ongoing series, they at least did the one thing I was hoping they would do is cut back on the supporting cast a little bit, because the supporting cast in this book, his two friends were pretty annoying, and they did kind of tone him down a little bit, so that's at least a little nice. But I'm not sure where the story's going. He's got a premonition about Dr. Fate and possibly the end of the world and a giant blue beetle monster, and we're not sure if that ties in. There's street gangs getting these superpowers, and they're trying to figure out, you know, how this ties into the beetle on his back. Somehow they think there's a connection. I don't know why, but nonetheless, they think there is, so apparently there's going to be one. The one thing about this book, though, is that it's written like the worst Bendis book ever.
Oh, gosh.
Which is to say that the book is one nonstop conversation, and almost nothing is allowed to happen. Everything happens through some sort of comment or some question or, where are we going? Why are we taking this? Why are we going there? Why are we going to talk to that person? What's happening now? Why do you have that in your hand? What's happening? You know, and it's just that nonstop talking. Everybody's talking. Everyone's talking on top of themselves. It's conversations where they could ask a question and get an answer, but instead it's got to be that Bendis-style conversation. So instead of being a question and an answer, it's six questions, five answers, and a smart-ass statement.
You know?
And after a while, I'm just like, this is the first issue, and they're already wearing me out. You know, I'm interested to see where it goes in the long run, because I do like, in general, the Blue Beetle character. I really like the Ted Kord version, but this version isn't, you know, too terrible either. But I don't think they've set it up as well as they could have. It, in some ways, it feels like the new Superman. New Superman, I think, fumbled right out the gate and has been trying to catch up to itself in the last couple issues. And I feel like this has that same kind of fumble right out the gate. I don't think this is a good first issue for drawing in new readers, so we'll see if it has some sort of resurgence, but I just get the feeling like this is going to be one of those books that doesn't last very long. We may get 11 issues out of it, Web Warrior style. We may get 20 issues out of it. I don't know, but I just don't see it lasting too terribly. So that's going to do it for my DC.
All right, rapid fire?
Yeah.
Just very quickly, we had the return of the Marvel hip-hop covers this week. This week's was the Doctor Strange Annual number one. It's actually a new school artist, Designer Panda. All you young kids out there are going to be able to tell me, tweet at me, at @agent_70, let me know what songs this artist has put out. But this artist has garnered attention enough to earn a hip-hop Marvel cover. This issue is a great little one and done. Well, actually, the annual contains two stories. One, the backup story, is a lead in into the Doctor Strange, the new series, the team up book with all the various sorcerers. But I kind of skimmed that particular story. The main story, though, was full of nostalgia for Doctor Strange fans, because it is the return of Clea. And, you know, there's a lot of, there's an exploration of their interpersonal relationship and kind of catching up on what Clea has been doing, especially in the wake of the recent, Death of Magic storyline in Doctor Strange. It's kind of interesting to see, you know, just little snippets of where the character has been. But, you know, the character is reintroduced. She's kind of reestablished in the Marvel U as someone who, Jason Aaron can draw on and put into a Doctor Strange book or into the team-up book. That's probably where you're going to see her next. But it's nice to see this old-school Doctor Strange character come back.
Yeah, I feel like that whole... Both of these were setting up future Doctor Strange storylines. Like you said, the second one was definitely a tie-in to the Doctor Strange and Sorcerer Supreme with Merlin. Well, first we start off with this, I guess, this young magician person going after some artifacts and then gets caught, and then Merlin comes after him. Because at first, it was just kind of funny because I did not know that was Merlin at first. I thought it was like, because as things happen sometimes in this universe, like it was an older version of him, of the character that that was in the, and it turned out to be Merlin. I was like, okay, and then that's where it just goes off into the that book coming up, and yeah, that the thing with Clea is definitely going to get brought up somewhere again,
right?
Probably in Doctor Strange, obviously, but I don't know about in the other book.
Right. My apologies to the artist. The artist's name is actually Designer. Or Designer, I think it's Designer. It looks like it's Designer. There's no pronunciation adjustments. But the album is actually called Panda. The song is actually called Panda. That's his debut single. It's not the character. The artist is not named Designer Panda, and I apologize.
Sounds like a better name. But anyway.
Oh no!
My last book is Star Wars 23. It was fun. I totally forgot about the like elite stormtrooper. Super squad group that they introduced like 2 or 3 issues ago. I thought the whole story arc was going to be based around those guys, but that was an issue to introduce them, and then it's been the rebellion stealing Star Destroyer?
Yeah.
And all the craziness that goes on with that, and Han and Leia arguing over who's going to be captain the ship, and then them racing to the captain chair,
the bridge.
Yeah, the bridge. Whoever gets there first gets to be captain.
Which I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was cool. Luke, I like the Luke and Sanaa sort of bonding moment, actually talking and getting to know one another. And then our stormtrooper squad shows up at the end to steal back the Star Destroyer. And as you see on the cover, they're like looking all badass.
Yeah,
and one has a lightsaber, so. Great art,
and yeah, because as we found out, this is a character we've seen before. Before they got introduced in that setup to this,
so Star Wars in 23.
I had one other real quick. Was the Mask Revolution?
Oh, good.
Which I've been super excited for this because I had a lot of these toys as a kid. I watched the cartoon show. I even had. Some of the videotapes, the VHS cassettes that came out for the show that I watched over and over and over as a kid. So super excited. Not as excited once I read this. It's one of those things where I started out reading it. About halfway through, I was skimming it. And by the time I got to the end, I was just flipping through the pages looking for the keywords and the key panels just to understand the story. The Revolution storyline is that Earth has found out that the Transformers are here on the planet. They're afraid of them. They want to build an army against them. So you've got Mask teaming up with G.I. Joe in order to fight against the Transformers. The Transformers are looking for their own allies, and it's going to tie in with the Micronauts and with Rom and, you know, all this other stuff. So this issue is them the leader grabbing this random group of people, bringing them in as cadets, killing off a couple of them, giving them their masks, putting them in the vehicles, and then shipping them off to G.I. Joe.
And so let's back us up a little bit. So that leader happens to be the leader of Venom.
It is, except there is no Venom yet.
Right, but he's also slightly recruiting them on the side. That's kind of the
Mayhem. Miles Mayhem, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And, but it's the way they introduce these characters, it's just like, hey, here's a guy, and he's good with machines, and here's a guy, and he likes to party, and here's a guy, and he's pretty smart. And,
I mean, that's kind of what Mask was, isn't it?
But then they go and they kill a couple of them off, and like you're supposed to care that these people died, and you have
you're not, because those people are not the main people that we know well, that older people would know from Mask series, you know, being in the actual series. Like,
but then they've changed some of the characters, so they're not the same ones from the 80s, and I don't know. It's one of those things where I felt like they changed enough that I needed a much better introduction to who these people are, what their personalities are, why they're getting the machines and the masks have the powers that they have, because there was a whole backstory to all this stuff in the toys and the cartoon back in the day, and you don't have any of that here. Instead, it just seems very random. It's like, well, you're standing here, so you get the gray and red one. You're standing here, you take the yellow one. You know,
I don't know if it was that, but I get what you're saying, though. It does kind of seem that way initially, though, because it's like, okay, it just seems right. Like, if you're not, especially if you don't know you know, where this come from, it does seem rather random. It's like, hey, this person just picks this because of that. There was no rhyme or reason as to why this person gets this or this kind of other. We see a little shade of that, and I suspect that's probably going to come out during the course of the book, maybe, to something that, if they even go that far with it. I don't know. This seems like a rebirth issue.
It just felt very light. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like the story that they wanted to tell was a much bigger story, but they just had to ramrod it through to get to the end to get them to meet up with G.I. Joe as part of this crossover.
Right.
Where it's like here
and then go into the next book, and then when the book comes out, let's go into it.
If you're not going to give me a full backstory, then I would have much rather this opened with them in some sort of battle, proving themselves that they can handle the weapons and the cars, going off to meet G.I. Joe, and we'll get to the backstory later, instead of here, where it was very much like a fast forward through. You know, because, I mean, how long are they getting there trained? You don't really know. Is it a matter of days? Was it a couple weeks? Like, it's not really clear how long the stuff's taking. Because, I mean, technically, when you look through it, it looks like maybe 3 days. Now, I'm guessing that they skipped some things in there and it's padded a little further. But as you actually go through and read it, I'm like, you only see them eating like two meals. And there's one reference to having like just woken up in the morning or whatever. So, I mean, technically, this is a long weekend and they're all trained and given their gear, you know. So I would assume it's a little longer. They just didn't go into all that detail. And I'd much rather, if you're not going to have the time for all that setup, then just open with the battle. Just get to the fighting and the good stuff and come back to it later. You know, introduce the characters and their powers that way instead of this. So I was not, I had really high hopes for this, and I just felt like it really didn't deliver.
Hmm.
Now, the one thing is that this is the revolution. This is the mask revolution, not the mask ongoing. So hopefully the ongoing series takes a breath and plays itself out a little better than this did. But yeah, I was just not as enthusiastic at the end of this issue as I was at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's why I said this is why I said it felt like a rebirth issue, because I'm sure maybe when the book actually gets started, it'll touch back on some of this and kind of go a little bit further in depth. This was just kind of say, okay, this is a book, this is going to happen, this is a thing. Even the cut at the end that, you know, showed the team meeting up with G.I. Joe, you know, at the end, it was like, all right, there's probably going to be something between that may hopefully get fleshed out, you know. Because they got out of some green, going to assume they're going to have time to do that when it goes ongoing. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad of a read, but I kind of agree with some of the stuff that they said. It just seems like, well, we don't know how long they.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't hate it. I'm not like, you know, oh, I'm never reading another one of these stupid things again. But I just definitely came out of it going, you know, this is a $4 book, you know. It's like,
I have a quick question. Did you read the main Revolution book last week, Dirk?
No.
Yes.
Okay. How'd you like it, Roddy?
It was okay. So I think I said this last week because, and I still need to go back and because there's a couple of the side books that seem to play out, and there's a lot going on in that book for a first issue that you seem to kind of maybe need to read a couple of the other books. I don't know which other couple of the books, and I'm still kind of behind on Transformers, so that part I'm still kind of loopy on. But I mean, it was. Things happened in that book. I didn't not like it. It was just like, okay, they're just packing a whole bunch of things together just because, again, it seemed like. But it seems to kind of fit, given the universes, in a couple of ways. You know, like the mask and the G.I. Joe part has kind of come through, but it seems all right, I guess. I don't know. I need to go back and read some other stuff.
All right.
Clicks of the week.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I still have.
Wait, did you read Waypoint, by the way, Roddy?
No, I have not read that yet.
Okay. I briefly flipped through it. I didn't have a chance to actually sit down and read it in depth, but there are two different stories in here, one set in the world of Next Generation and one set in the world of the original series. And the nice thing is these are not Abramsverse. These are the Prime Universe.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So everybody who's not liking a lot of the changes that they made in the new movies and whatnot, this is for you. For
Star Trek Fast and Furious.
For people that want like the real stories, this is going back to the TV shows. I'm hoping we get a Deep Space Nine run out of this at some point.
Oh, but, please hope. Yeah.
And this is written by a friend of the show, Danny Cates.
Yay!
Did you do both of them or just one of them? I can't remember, because I know there was like two different stories. So.
I just see his name on the cover. And, I saw him retweeting some nice tweets from this afternoon and morning with people saying how much they enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean to get to this one, but I just didn't. But I got one quick one real quick. My last one will be Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 11. So after the events of last issue, you know, Lunella's in a place. So she's trying to, she's kind of felt bad about her meeting with Miss Marvel because she didn't feel like she was being real awkward than she was, you know. So she kind of goes off on her own. She's kind of feeling some kind of way. She also gets into another fight with Kid Kree, who is, what's his name? Marvel. Oh, it's not Marvel, whatever. Because Kid Kree kind of comes into her secret base and then gets, you know, shooed out by Devil Dinosaur. That happens, and then Lunella ends up meeting up with Ms. Marvel again, and this meeting doesn't go any better because she ends up switching brains with Devil Dinosaur again and ends up getting put into a hospital because Ms. Marvel was there, you know, and takes her there and they strap her down another. So by the time she gets back into her old, her old body again, like she's just feeling kind of despondent because again, you know, Ms. Marvel being an idol and another messed up meeting because of that happening kind of goes bad. Then after that, we go see this kid Marvin, who happens to be Miss Kid Kree in disguise as an Earth guy, come to Lunella's house and try to cheer her up, I guess, kind of way, because he knows who she is, but she doesn't know who he is.
Right. Ultimately, but eventually she finds out, and exactly left with to. Right, and we're left with a mild cliffhanger because a number of issues in this series have dealt with this Kree. You know, this Kid Kree trying to hunt down this particular Inhuman, aka Moon Girl. I've been trying to catch up on the series, and I find myself, I think it suffers from a little bit of unevenness, and it's kind of hard to follow at times. I'm still not 100% clear on how Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur are actually connected. I think I understand it on a very basic level, but I guess, you know, we're, what, 11, well, how many issues in? 11 issues in, yeah. And I'm not comfortable with this, but bear in mind, I'm not completely caught up. You know, so it's, I think, I don't know if this is the easiest story to jump right into. It's kind of surprising that they have not yet actually established like a jumping on point soon, you know, quickly, since they, you know, since they revealed that, you know, mild spoiler alert, because this was in the comic news not too long ago. But Moon Girl is now the smartest person in the Marvel Universe, surpassing even Reed Richards. So it's kind of, I'm surprised that they really haven't found a good jumping on point for new readers in the wake of that kind of news and that kind of attention for the character. So I've been reading this on and off, and I thought this was good, but like I said, it just feels uneven, and it just feels like it's something difficult to pick up just on a whim. I love this cover, though. This is a really nice cover.
Yeah, I like that, too. Yeah, I suspect that's, I guess, going forward, they could very well just kind of link her into, like, Champions, say, you know, kind of...
Right. I just think that there needs to be, like, platform. There needs to be, like, a clean break from, you know, after the storyline to really set up Luna, or Lunella, right? As, yeah. As the character, right, as the character that she is destined to be.
Right. So, which brings me to something I meant to ask about last week. Did anybody read Extraordinary X-Men Annual?
Nope.
Okay, still sitting in the pile of books to read.
Yeah, because I know she showed up in there in the backstory, but I didn't know if she was like in that book, or that was just for that backstory. So,
all right, clicks of the week.
Yep, mine's a book I didn't even mention.
Ha!
Defender number 15 from Image Comics.
Okay,
this is actually the last book I read before the show, so that might be why it's resonating with me a little more than others, but. I'm back caught up on Descender from Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. This is a story concerning the two characters you see on the cover right there, Andy on the left and Effie on the right. So this is a flashback story. It shows how when Andy got taken away from his mom, but his mom stayed back on the planet that they were on, and he got sent away. They're basically like evacuating all these planets because of these big, bad robot monsters that are like attacking everywhere, and he gets sent to like a orphanage with all these other kids who are abandoned because their parents are probably dead, and that's where he meets Effie. She's this like tech wizard that he sort of bonds with, and as we see as the story progresses, the years, it starts like says 10 years ago and then jumps to 6 years ago, then forward and three as the story moves along. As it jumps ahead to like 6 years ago, Andy's about to run away from the orphanage that they're both at because he wants to go become a scrapper. And scrappers are sort of like pirates that go around the galaxy hunting robots and to destroy them, I guess, and like get their parts for money or whatever. She wants to go with them. They fall in love and get married. We jump ahead again where Effie is starting to get disenfranchised with the scrapper life. And you can tell that she's starting to get have feelings toward robots as far as like, you know, all of them aren't these big, bad, you know, human hunting sentinels. Some of them just want to go about their lives and be left alone. They have one last mission together with the group of scrappers that they're with. They find this colony of robots who are breeding, or AKA, I guess, sort of making other robots. And these breeders, these breeding robots will end up getting skin that look like humans so that they could blend in with other humans. So of course, Andy doesn't want that to go on. So he's like blowing them all up, and she gets mad and leaves and decides, you know, that they need to just break up because they have different views on how to deal with the robots. And then the story jumps ahead again to where she's with this group that are trying to like save these robots from getting thrown into these melting pots. She accidentally gets knocked in while trying to save one. She wakes up in a hospital bed and Andy's there with her, and she's like, you know, severely damaged or hurt. And she's got a metal arm now because I guess she lost her arm and she fell into the pit, and like half her bottom mouth and neck is like all scarred up and whatnot. Andy wants to take her to go get some real treatment. And you can tell that she's sort of fascinated by the robot arm she has now. And she's like, you know, this is part of me now, yada, yada, yada. We're broken up. And then it jumps ahead to the present where they've met again. And he has to console her because the sort of cyborg, she's running a cyborg unit, and a bunch of her followers just got so. But this is a great series. And Dustin does some great stuff with the sort of watercolor.
The wash.
Painting, water wash art style that he uses on the book. So this is the second to last part of this story arc. So I guess next month will be the final, and then we'll have a break for a couple months until it comes back.
Or is it catch up?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. My click of the week, I mentioned it earlier, is fairly clear cut for me because I had a really good time reading Jessica Drew kind of hash out her feelings in the wake of Civil War II. So my click of the week is Spider-Woman number 11.
I'm going to go with the book that almost brought me to tears this week. Damn it. Web Warriors number 11.
Yay! End of an era. Yes. Yes. Shout out to Web Warriors.
You had a good run. Well, and which leaves me with the obvious choice for me, Miss Marvel number 11.
Nice.
I don't know why I put Captain Marvel there, but that was wrong. But yes, Miss Marvel number 11 was my pick.
Nice. We need to, for our end of the year awards, we are going to go through and see like which book had the most clicks of the week, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Miss Marvel is going to be the leader.
It's a good point. Yep.
Every time there's an issue out, someone marks it as their click of the week. So. Yep. It will be an interesting thing to go see which series had the most.
And the most between us. I think we know Dirt's.
I don't know. For me, is it going to be Sheriff of Babylon or Vision?
That's true.
Yep. That's right.
I'm going to go with Sheriff.
That's going to be pure numbers. That's just a numbers battle. Like, which one published more issues? Yeah.
Exactly. In that series.
In the calendar of where it falls down.
Right, exactly. Where they clash with each other, right?
I was about to say, since Vision's about to end, I think that's probably going to...
Well, Sheriff of Babylon's going to end, too.
Both of them are.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let me get an ad read in, then we can move on to the next segment in the show. Today's podcast is sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother schlepping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today.
All right. Now the cinematic news of the week. Power Rangers adds former Saturday Night Live star Bill Hader as Alpha 5.
Really?
That was from last week, and I forgot to mention it. But
yeah,
there you go.
I'm guessing just as a voice, not doing the live action acting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because he also did BB-8 also. So I'm just thinking.
Yeah, he did sound effects in Star Wars. Let's see. Luke Cage showrunner teases possible heroes for hire in season 2. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
that is cool. Makes sense too.
Page down. Come on. You may have to do this, ready?
Where are we? So this we got this one from CatMar77. So thank you for that. There is going to be a Tribe Called Quest. Ali Sheheed Muhammad and Adrian Young, who are both the musical producers on Marvel's Luke Cage, is going to do a live concert. That concert is coming up. There's also Ali's doing this, the musical score, and I think Adrian Young is doing the. So I can't remember how it goes, but basically, there's going to be a 40-piece orchestra conducted by Miguel Atwell Ferguson. The concert is going to be soon.
Yeah, the live score takes place on October 6th at the theater at the East Hotel, Los Angeles. Tickets are already on sale; might be sold out already.
There we go. Yeah, and there's also going to be a soundtrack album for Marvel's Luke Cage coming out on October 7th, which actually. Mentioned some of the musical guests that are going to be on the show which I guess we'll get to in a second. There was a recent trailer that also had Method Man in it who did not show up as a musical guest. But my takeaway from this, outside of the concert, which I wish I could be there for because it's going to be in LA and soon, but it seems like since they're doing musical guests on the show, kind of reminds me of New York Undercover, and I like that idea.
Oh, you mean where there's like a club where there's a performance and there's like a
possibly it didn't
like
say
a performance
how they
show... of the episode maybe?
Right, because yeah. we don't say how they all we just know is that they're going to be musical guests. We don't know how they're going to play into it, but that seems more likely, especially since a part of the show has to do with the villain owning the club. So
the next story is about more Luke Cage. I refuse to watch the last trailer. I don't want to see any more footage. So apparently, Method Man from the Wu-Tang Clan appears in. The last Luke Cage trailer before it drops tonight/tomorrow morning. So that's cool.
While we're at it, because this just also dropped, the opening credits to Luke Cage was also just came out of.
Right. Again, refusing to watch. It's coming out shortly. Not going to watch any of the stuff before that.
That trailer, that Method Man trailer is actually cute. It seems a little tacked in where that part ends, but it was kind of cool to see.
All right. So the next story is Luke Cage's Misty Knight will appear on The Defenders. So the character that will be introduced in the Luke Cage series is going to appear in The Defenders Netflix series as well. So that's cool to see that they'll be incorporating more of these characters, especially a more mainstream character like Misty Knight.
I mean, it makes sense. I got the Defenders is pretty much a culmination of all the shows, as it were. So we're probably going to end up seeing a little bit of everybody showing up.
Gotcha.
I'm back.
Yay!
Which, by the way, there was... I can't remember if we talked about this last week or not. We may have about the Punisher suiting up for something this month.
Yeah, that's a tease.
Yeah.
That's
a tease. It could be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is what they were teasing.
That's what I wanted to bring up, because they were saying that might have been... That was the rumor.
Yeah. So Marvel agreed to delay production on Doctor Strange to nag Benedict Cumberbatch.
Guess they really, really wanted him.
Cumberbatch all but confirmed Strange will appear in Infinity War.
Yeah, that's a pretty big confirmation. You know, he kind of let that drop. I'm surprised that the Marvel snipers didn't take him out already, you know?
And you can, if you're anxious to see Doctor Strange, you can watch 15 minutes for free in IMAX and enter in a contest. I tried entering because there's actually an IMAX theater here in town, but the only ones in Georgia are for two in Atlanta. So screw that.
Yeah. All right.
See, there's some strange photos and posters for Doctor Strange. They're motion posters, I believe.
Yes.
See, this film draws huge inspiration from Ditko art, per Kevin Feige. Marvel's Hulu Runaways nabs an Iron Fist writer, and that's Tamara Beecher. Samuel Jackson teases the possibility of S.H.I.E.L.D. returning to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're not really needed anymore, so I guess they could, but meh. Marvel has already filmed Stan Lee's next four cameos for Marvel Cinematic Movies.
Well, that's kind of a wise move. The dude is 93. Shout out to Stan Lee, who I'm looking to meet this next weekend at New York Comic Con.
Yes. Black Panther taps person of interest actor Winston Duke to play
M'Baku.
How do you pronounce this? M'Baku?
Mm-hmm. Man-Ape. And that's, it's just, I don't know if it's been confirmed because Marvel hadn't said anything, so that's kind of still rumorish.
Up in the air.
And the snipers are out in full force. Okay.
This was news to me. Fox schedules an untitled Marvel film for IMAX.
Yeah, we still don't have information on that.
In news from a couple weeks ago, new DuckTales animated series gets an official logo and promo poster.
Woo!
Valiant's Bloodshot and Harbinger movies are rescheduled and rearranged. Basically, just swapped around.
Yeah, for this link.
So it's going to be a Harbinger movie first and then Bloodshot. Arrow star Stephen Amell teases Deathstroke return for 100th episode.
And apparently we also just found out that Myra Queen is also slated to be on the show.
And I think the 100th episode ties into the crossover episode. So
yeah, that's what they're saying, yeah.
Batman star Joe Manganiello teases Deathstroke research. Looks like Cyborg will definitely be in the Flash movie. Batman solo film a year and a half out this time, Warner exec.
Batflack.
A new Supergirl promo brings Superman to National City. Smallville awesome. Is available to stream for the first time ever on Hulu in October. Meh. Yeah. Amazon and Studios orders The Tick to series.
1, 2, 3, Spoon!
NBCU acquires graphic novel series Trees for Tom Hardy's...
His production company. Sorry, I forgot that.
And the Luke Cage opening credit sequence sings a love song to Harlem, which you can watch on the official Twitter account for Luke Cage now, the intro.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we don't have it on here, but they announced that the who those aliens are going to be part of the DCTV four-way crossover. Y'all saw that today?
Say what?
DC crossover event called The Invasion.
Oh, no.
From the 80s.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The Dominators.
Dominators, yeah. They're going to be the villains in the big four-way crossover between the DC TV shows.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first time aliens will be involved, not counting, I guess, Supergirl.
Yeah, I guess Supergirl, probably.
Yeah. Well,
not the time they built the pyramids in Egypt, but, you know, beyond that.
As I said, this is one step closer to John Stewart Green Lantern maybe appearing finally in Arrow or something.
I'd probably give it to Dickle, though.
That, I guess in the comics, Dominators were tied to the Legion of Superheroes somehow.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're a race of aliens, so they're seen throughout history. So, yes, in the Legion of Superheroes, they fought a lot, but that was way in the future. And then part of the explanation was that the Dominators had tried to take over Earth in the past and had failed. And then, you know, 1,000 years later, whatever, our expansions out in the universe brought us back into contact with them, and then they were a problem in the Legion of Superheroes again.
Okay.
All right.
In comic news, Spider-Man Deadpool comic is debuting a new villain from Kelly and McGinnis.
The Itsy Bitsy villain.
Okay. That's so funny.
It's called Itsy Bitsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, she actually appeared in the new issue that came out this week.
Did they do that issue, or villain?
Yeah.
The villain group?
It was Kelly McGinnis this week.
I read it. I just didn't talk about it on the show, but she's right there. That's her. She's
hold on. Let me put the focus on you.
Here, let me find the page here. She's like the Spawn. Someone cloned bits and made
them itsy. Made them itsy.
Are they bits of Deadpool? Since he's always like getting chopped up and
I believe it's Deadpool and Spider-Man mixed together.
Interesting. Supposedly that book sells well. I heard.
Yeah, I mean it was fine. It's this issue wasn't particularly remarkable, so I just didn't talk about it on the show, but it was mostly them just having a funny conversation while they're in the middle of a big fight, and then this character appears at the end. There wasn't a whole lot to it, but I mean, it wasn't a Bendis style conversation. It was just a fun conversation, so it was at least better than that stuff goes.
All right. Stan Lee renames his comic convention. So Stan Lee's Kamikaze Expo has been renamed as Stan Lee's LA Comic Con.
Well, it's a little easier on the tongue there, Kamikaze. Come on.
Yeah, really.
In wrestling news, WWE ongoing comic series enters the ring in January 2017 from Boom Studios.
Once again.
Actually, this one, look, let me just say this. The one thing that this series has going for it is that always in the past they've tried to do some sort of alternate storyline. They're all trapped in a town, and all the people in the town are the wrestlers and their real lives and whatever. The way this series is being put together is it's supposed to elaborate on some of the backstage skits and alliances and things that go on, the secret history between characters when a good guy turns evil. And you just hear, you know, like, well, I was always the brains behind the group, and you guys never gave me credit, whatever, blah, blah, blah. This will actually show how that actually played out, how they turned against their friends, how they made an alliance with the bad guy, that type of stuff. So it's meant to actually tie into the current product and expand the storylines from TV. So that makes it at least a lot more interesting than the other ones, where it's just like, oh, we all live in the same apartment building, and we happen to get into these funny adventures, you know, type of stuff that you've always seen before.
Yeah, so I suppose the main story is going to center around the three members of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then the backup story is going to feature the New Day.
Right.
And Dennis Hopeless is right in the,
yeah, I was about to say.
The main series, the main S.H.I.E.L.D. story. And at least the art for the New Day is going to be done by the guy from 2. What's his name?
Oh, Rob Hillary?
Yes, thank you. Let's see, back to the news.
Hey, at least it's not baseball.
Oh, boo.
Valiant debuts Faith Pop imported for New York Comic Con. So she'll get a, was it pop vinyl?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Hard Case Crime comes to comics. Hard Case Crime is a cool publisher that specializes in hardboiled crime novels by authors like Michael Crichton, Lawrence Block, yada, yada, yada. Let's see, they've teamed up with Titan Comics to create a line of Hard Case Crime comics. Okay. Jim Zub leading a Building Your Comics Project Master Seminar for Comics Experience.
Nice.
Let's see, Richard Rider's back in Nova this week.
Yay!
I was going to skip that issue, but I'm going to read it just for that. So, there you go. And Comixology launches second comic creators trading cards.
Cool. All right, so before we wrap, I guess I'll put in another ad read. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcasts free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today! As it sounds like somebody's transforming something in the background.
Shush. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not doing anything. The stupid all thing right. Won't tab in. It's supposed to tab
home.
Right into the spot.
Tim, I could hear it. I knew it. See, this is why you've got to watch the video YouTube feed, people.
And also make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron, at Roddycat and at NewsNerdsNeed. PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt on Twitter, and go to his website popculturenetwork.com and check out his Vine reviews. What does your link say? vine.com/Vine Comic Reviews with the vowels removed.
That's right. Because supposedly that's easier.
Mm.
And go to, you can follow Agent 70 at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll be back next week. It's going to be New York Comic Con craziness. Agent 70 may or may not be with us.
Yeah, depending on what my schedule is for that Thursday. So we'll see. We'll also probably be discussing at least a little bit of Luke Cage. It's about to drop.
Yep.
Yep.
3 a.m. Eastern Time, 12 Pacific.
You got
woo-hoo.
It.
I'll watch it at some point when I wake up tomorrow.
Nice.
So with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!